Hello and welcome to the Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass, the unofficial companion podcast to the Muppets Mayhem, presented by ToughBigs.com. This is the podcast where we tour through every episode of the Muppets Mayhem to uncover behind-the-scenes stories, Easter eggs, and more with the talented cast and crew who helped put the series together. I'm your host, dedicated Mayhead, Joe Hennis. Today we are talking about Track 7, 8 Days a Week, in which the band comes together for a hard day's night to please, please me with the Ballad of John and Yoko. I am the Walrus. This week, we are excited to welcome some very fab guests. First up, he's the co-creator and executive producer of The Muppets Mayhem. Please welcome Nowhere Man Jeff Yorks back to the podcast. Thank
you,
Jeff.
Thank you very much for having me. Glad to be here.
Hooray.
Next up, he is another co-creator and executive producer, as well as the performer who makes Dr. Teeth's piano gently weep. Please welcome Bill Beretta back to the podcast. Hey, Bill.
Thank you very much.
That's very good. Our final guest is the Muppet performer behind Sesame Street's Abby Cadabby and the Muppets Mayhem Penny Lane. That's Penny Waxman. Please welcome Leslie Carrara-Rudolph to the podcast. Hey, Leslie.
Thank you for having me.
So excited to talk to you about this episode and to talk to you about Penny Waxman, the breakout character of 2023.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that? Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to the role of Penny?
Oh, for me, it was love at first sight. I got the notice we'd like you to audition. You know, I didn't even know there was other characters happening. You know, I had no idea. So I was just excited, like, oh, this will be excited. And then they sent over the art. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, it was like, I just knew this woman. I know this woman. I'm every woman. It's all in me. You know, I just like, when I saw it, I was like, oh gosh. And then they had the Tina audition for Dr. Teeth's mom. So the two female roles, but I was just so laser focused on Penny that, and then there was no other voice for her. I was just like, there's no other voice for me but me. And so she's just so, like, everything about her, the fact that she's big and she's strong, and then reading her line about how, like, she's passionate about music, that she's from New York, and she followed her dream all the way to California, you know, and started her business. I'm like, she's like, this is what I'm doing. So I love that they chose a big, strong female character that is just unapologetically herself. So I just fell in love. And then they sent over the sides. And the writing is so perfect for her that it was just, I don't know. She was just one of those, she's like butter, right? Literally like butter. Like she just rolls off the tongue. The beats are in there. The language is so full. It's like Shakespeare. You know what I mean? I'm just me.
Penny Spear.
Yeah, she was just one of those dream characters. Like when you're like everybody dreams to have, like, you know, some sort of villain or something, like some sort of big, strong, you know, meaty character like this, and they don't come around too often. So it was like a dream come true. It's like the ultimate, you know, she's not a villain or anything. She's just amazing.
She is an antagonist.
Yeah. But she is in the most possible way, because she is out of love for the man that she loves, you know? She's not mean. She's angry. You know, Bill would say, make her meaner. I'm like, I'm not mean. I'm not an angry clown. I'm angry because, oh, how dare you? And then you go and squeeze me, you know?
Yeah, I think she's hurt more than angry.
Yeah, she's hurt, Bill.
You know, what's interesting?
Whoa.
In the writer's room, Bill would read Penny's lines, and he was great. And it was really a tough thing because we knew it wasn't going to be Bill. And we were just like, who could be as good as Bill is? And you are better.
Well, I knew. I could hear her.
Yeah.
Because I always heard Leslie in my head. You know, when we were writing, I knew that was there.
Yeah, in her
hopefully
wheelhouse.
That's where we were going to end up. Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know, you know, because we had people, you know, auditioning.
Mistaken for Bill a lot.
I mean, visually.
But it's not vocally. I pick up the phone, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I was calling Bill.
Oh, right.
Was this the voice that you heard in your head, Bill?
Yeah.
The voice that we ended up with?
Yeah, I mean, close to it. It wasn't exactly it, but I knew it was in Leslie's repertoire, you know. I knew there was this woman in there. And so in my head, I kind of hear it just was better when ultimately we heard her do it, you know. But I in my little brain, I knew she was there. I wasn't sure because other people auditioned as well, and there were some great, you know, auditions. But I guess I just always heard this, and I didn't know how this was going to turn out, but it's exactly how it's supposed to be.
Leslie brings this liveliness to Penny that I guess one of the things with the auditions we were afraid of was we were getting a lot of Roz from Monsters, Inc.
Hmm.
And it matches the image, certainly. But what Leslie brought was just like, yeah, she's still alive and she's got this temper
energy.
And this fire in her. And that's very Leslie, you know?
Gave me those tiny feet.
Right.
I have to balance myself on these tiny feet. I have to remain somewhat limber.
But there's a lot of energy. She's this very big character, there's a lot of energy. A lot of people would maybe play it down.
Right.
But her movements, and she is very grounded, and her movements are solid and grounded, but the energy from in her is what's alive, you know. It's great.
That was coached a lot, though, from Bill, because he would, you know, you could fit like 20 Abbeys inside of Penny, right? You know, like, and I'm laughing. A lot of times I'm laughing in there because I'm like in this Volkswagen bus. You know, or well, more of a couch. I'm inside
like an igloo
couch, right?
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because here I am, this little person, and her, you know, this little, I'm like her kidney, right? I'm this little blonde kidney behind these two giant boobs, and I'm seeing what's up there. And Bill would come in and he'd go, a little less, you know, just a little, make it simple, you know. So he was like, I felt like I was in good hands. I told people, I was like, Bill was my Burgess Meredith and I was Rocky. Come in and he'd give him a note and stuff like that. But I have to say really quickly, because this is really important. When I was on Muppets Tonight, which was 26 years ago, I went in to the Muppet workshop and I got pictures of all the female characters. And I shared this with Bill, and I had a little character book, and I pasted the pictures of each character in the book, and I wrote characters for each of them. I wrote a little backstory, and there was this one woman, and I got to play with Jerry Nelson, who was in the Pierce Brosnan episode. And yeah. I named her Minnie Goldberg, which was like 26 years later, maybe that me drawing, I willed it. And she was this, she had low rider shades. She was wearing a very too tight gold lame dress she was barrel shaped. And I had such joy with that. And Jerry was playing with me and I was like, I love this character.
Is that Les? Is that the same one that did the Billy Crystal scene? I'll have what she's having.
Yeah.
Is that the same puppet?
Yeah, no, it's a different one.
Oh, right.
I had
that's where one. I heard that too.
I said that line three times in three different Muppet situations.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Once on Sesame Street, I can't remember what it was. I think it was like True Mud or something.
Was it about
that.
The letter O?
Hmm.
Leslie, can you talk a little bit about the challenges of playing such a huge puppet like Penny?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I was more excited when I got it. You're looking at the picture, right? And then I'm just thinking she's just going to be a little bigger than Dr. Teeth. I'm just thinking, oh, you know, it's a big puppet. I've done cows before. I've done other stuff. And Bill goes, hey, Les, how soon can you get out here? There's something you should know about Penny. I was like, huh? I guess I'll come out. Like, you know, something you should know about Penny is that you're going to have to wear a backpack with a metal pole up your back, and it's going to go into her hump, and we got to distribute the weight. And then I was like, oh my God, and you're probably going to have a chest monitor. But I was so excited. None of it mattered. I was like, this is going to be awesome. I have actually had experience wearing a backpack with a metal pole when I danced at Beach Blanket Babylon, because we used to have these giant hats on our heads, and we actually had a harness with like an actual garbage can on our head and done the can-can. So like that was the problem. The fact that I was wearing Bill Beretta's, we're built so differently. He has very long torso. So it was like, it was very funny. So it was kind of quirky. So the first part time before I got my own backpack, that was probably the hardest part, because it was sitting funny. It wasn't on my hips. It was at my knee.
and you couldn't tighten it enough, probably. I mean,
it was just weird. But the cool thing is that I came in early. The Muppet Workshop is so awesome and brilliant. Like I was never nervous. And Bill was there. You know, she went through some structural issues with the mouth, because physically, you know, the arm, it wasn't actually ever uncomfortable for me to have my left arm in there. I was always like, it just sat at just the right place, you know, so that was fine. She was surprisingly light. They carved, you know, they made her hair. So they distributed it, and they worked so hard as a team. The only thing that was tricky was that, you know, because it was such a time issue, that I didn't really get to work with Penny on camera till the first scene. And that was like, oh my gosh, all my scenes are my first time seeing her on camera. And I just was like, well, I'm just going to do the best I can and see what happens. And Bill knows this, because Bill is my teacher, is that you're figuring out the angles of the character and what looks. I started discovering different things, like, you know, what looked good, what her angles were. You know, I had a right hand which was more enthusiastic than my movements. So Bill would say, match Leslie's movements, make it smaller. I also found out that, I think it was the episode where they were having the tie-dye party and she comes in with a hot pepper. I found that if I tilted her back a little and I did something with my thing, she smiled. She has this lip, and it actually looks like she's squinting, even though I'm always squinting. Squinting.
You know, just to mention, the thing that in the beginning, like the first, I don't know, whatever, a couple weeks maybe, I would come in and just talk about simplifying things, because I wish I could remember who told me, but when I was doing Bobo, I at first would move him the same, with the same energy and same, same energy as I would with any hand puppet, a smaller one. And it always didn't feel real to me. It felt false to me that Bobo could be that, like it, you know, it became a puppet because it was so light and flimsy. And so that's what I was just trying to get through with Leslie, was just be careful that you don't put all of that abby-cadabby energy, you know, the movement, right? Not the character, but the movement and the manipulation doesn't lighten the character and make it feel like it's just a floppy kind of puppet. And she did. She found the balance of the energy, but giving her weight as if she's really standing there, you know?
He would always come over and say, give her weight. And I also, when I first started on Muppets Tonight, I'd only had a 4-hour monitor class with Bill. I was thrown. It's like, oh yeah. And it was, people have heard me say, my first day, they gave me Karen Prell's boots, New Zealand, and told me to stand next to Animal, which was Frank Oz. And I was like, this is going to be an epic fire. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to be fired. I'm going to be rude. I mean, but Bill would say, Bill was like, and everybody was busy. Like they didn't have time to, but he would always come in and he'd say, you know, I'd work on something every day. And he goes, watch people. You know, I was always on set. He goes, watch the way people perform and see what you like, see what works for you. And one of the things I really love, one of my favorite characters is Johnny Fiamma, right? Because Johnny is, he's still, and he's got that energy, it was coming in. It was like Bill says, like, I really wanted Penny to be real. I didn't want her to be a punchline or an angry clown or anything. I just wanted her to be real. And you know, I know that, like I said, I know this woman so well, and I wanted to honor that, the woman. So it was really a wonderful discovery. And I wasn't, you know, when you don't have time to be scared, because it's like, I just didn't have time. It was like, this is your day. And I remember that first day, Bill, we did everything. Not only you're in this puppet for the first time. Oh, by the way, we need you to swing around, make eye contact, right? I was like, I don't even know how to fly an iPhone. Make eye contact. There's two grips turning the chair with you. Do this. We're going to throw your leg up.
And yet, B, you have somebody working with you doing the hand inside of the thing, but not, I mean, it was crazy. Yeah.
And then the couch, then you're in a couch and your arms like long enough. I was just like, oh my God. And I was just like, I want people to make their day. I was like, I'm going to stay in Penny. Don't take me out of Penny. I don't want to, because
yeah,
I was
you didn't
like,
come out.
Because you're on a schedule, and every hour that you go over, it goes into the next day. And I was like, I'm the new kid. I'm going to stay in Penny and I'm just going to do this. But after that last scene, I fell out of the couch and crawled out and sobbed on the ground. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, you did it.
Let's jump into the episode. There's so much more to talk about. We could go on for an hour just about Penny's feet.
Well, can I say one thing about that? My favorite thing when I was watching it and she flips her leg up. The sound that makes. No, Bill, the sound effects guys were having a blast. I was like, well, try this. Let's try throwing a frozen ham on a desk. I find the sound of her limb hitting a desk.
The thud. I'm just going to give a quick background for this episode. Because a lot of cynics out there were just like, well, this is obvious corporate synergy. This was foisted upon them to tie in with the Disney Plus movie, Get Back. And it was not at all. We were in the writer's room, and I think our mini room. No, our writer's room, I think, at that point. And it was Thanksgiving weekend 21. And of course, that's what Thanksgiving weekend, it premiered on Disney Plus, Get Back, the Peter Jackson Beatles documentary. And I watched it all, you know, 12 hours of it. And I came in on Monday after the vacation. I'm like, we have to do this. Like, I don't know if it's a scene. It could be just a cold open. And you just have like Peter Jackson just walk out of a room and just be like, I can't, you know. I just can't. Or I don't. Maybe it's a whole episode. I don't know. And then we just started talking about it, and it became a whole episode, which is almost a bottle episode. But we had to ask for permission to do this episode from Disney Plus. That was the interesting part. Mm. Whereas you couldn't necessarily, like, if we were another studio parodying it, you could do that. But because this is like part of the family, we had to get permission. So I believe Adam went and had to speak to representatives from Apple Corps, the Beatles company, and Wingnut Films, Peter Jackson's production company, and present our idea to them. And they were all on board. And that's when we heard back from one of the people at Wingnut saying that Peter Jackson thinks it's a great idea. And if you want his involvement in any way, just let him know. And that's when we all just sort of looked at each other. We're like, but can we?
And then we still had to figure out when it was going to be in the
schedule
episode. Yeah.
Oh, like where it was going to be in the season.
Where it was going to land. Right. You know, it wasn't just like, well, let's do a documentary style episode at episode 4. You know, it had to work with our timeline.
It still had to follow the arc of these characters. And so certainly we were going to build this around where those characters are at. Yeah. The other interesting thing about it is when we were in production, I think another director was supposed to do it, but the director of our first block was Matt Sohn, who came up as a DP. and he did stuff like Survivor, but he also was the DP
on The Office.
Of The Office. He was the DP of The Office for several years. This was almost a homecoming because he was at the studio where they made it. But it became clear that he would be the perfect person for this. And he was, absolutely. I think we shot this. This was the fastest turnaround of any episode because he knew what he was doing. He's been here before. But also, instead of being like, okay, now we're going to reframe it for Teeth's close-up or for this wide shot, you could do that all in a single take as the camera whips over and crash zooms in, you know? And he knew that language and, you know.
It's easier with humans because it's more forgiving to whip pan, right? To a human.
Absolutely.
But with puppets, you have to be careful of what you're seeing below. Well, he was a director on our last series, the 2015 series. So he was already familiar with, and same with our other crew, you know, our other camera operators. So it was, it just worked out really well.
Can I just say one thing? What I love about the series, and because Jeff brought it up, is that it was so dedicated in the writing to the emotional arc. Like he said, he's like, we're excited. We want to do this, but if it's not going to work, you know, like the characters always came first, which is so lovely, you know, the way that it, and where are they in the evolution? It has to fit. So I love that you fought for that. I think that's really.
Well, that was the luxury of how we got to write ahead, was that we.
And it wasn't a fight because you have partners who were just like, yes, absolutely. That's what we have to do.
So and knowing that you can do 10 episodes ahead of time, you're writing the themes and the stories and the arcs of the entire season as well as each episode. So it was fun to, okay, where is this going to work best?
I mean, I know that when this show was originally announced, a lot of fans, myself included, thought, oh, it's just going to be a parody of Get Back. Like the whole thing is just going to be, because we knew from the get-go it was going to be about the band making their first album.
Or
which
Spinal
is,
Tap.
I know, Spinal Tap as well. Yeah, which we do get a little bit of in this episode. I'm grateful that you didn't go that way, because I think what you ended up with was narratively much more interesting. But it would have been really cool to see literally just, you know, 5 or 6 hours of the band in the studio spoofing Get Back. It would have been very...
You're saying like plotless.
I would pull
just
my
to
hair
have.
Yes. Yes. I think plot is better.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this was a better idea, but I think a lot of us were just assuming, like, you know, because we didn't know the mayhem were going to be able to carry a plot as well as they did.
Right.
So to be flies on the wall while they're just working and doing silly stuff could have worked. And I'm really grateful that you did it for one episode.
Yep.
It is such a good spoof. And I'm sure, in addition to myself, most people watching this are huge Beatles fans. So we're really appreciating those Beatles references as well. So Nora has invited a documentary crew to capture the Mayhem's writing and recording methods. And Zoot immediately wonders who's going to play him in this documentary. And that's going to be a joke that takes us through this whole episode. It's hysterical. Nora brings JJ into the fold as well. And there's this great shot where he walks in and Animal immediately throws a bongo drum at his head. And like that looks like it comes real close to him.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did it. He dodged just in time.
Good.
Yeah.
Or else you'd have to explain why JJ has a black eye for the rest of the series.
Right. And that's the thing too. This is when we first start to sow the idea that JJ and Nora are kind of coming together a little bit again, that they're spending time together.
Yeah, this was after Joshua Tree.
Right, yes, exactly, yeah. And then we meet our director of this documentary. It's Kevin Smith, which is a great cameo. One of those people, again, who I'm surprised hadn't crossed paths with the Muppets earlier. He has such a great sense of humor about himself and sense of humility, because immediately you're making fun of the fact that like he's made all these Clerks movies. Dr. Teeth calls out Yoga Hosers as like one of his lesser films. And he even says about himself that he makes critically panned R-rated movies. Yeah. But he's ready to get into family entertainment, which is why he's here. He seemed to be having a good time. Was it fun to work with him?
He had a great time. He really was happy to be there. He was just having fun. He was just hanging, loved hanging and having fun. You know, it was great. Really
conceptually, good. He also feels like a contemporary of the band. Like it just seems obvious that he would know them. they would run in the same circles. So it just lent itself so perfectly.
Yeah. And then you get this great moment, which made it into all the trailers, where he tells the bands that the cameras will be filming, but do not look into the camera. He calls action, and immediately they all look straight down the barrel of the camera, motionless.
Yeah, in the first draft, I tried to hide as many Beatles songs into the dialogue as possible. This is, you know, the process is a long one where it's rewritten several times. But this, I think, one is still in there where he tells them to act naturally, which is technically
Beatles
cover, you know,
that's great.
Of Buck Owens. But yeah, act naturally is still in there.
Hmm. Nice. I missed that one. I was trying to capture all of the
audiences the across references. The universe have been wondering what.
That's good. Yeah. This documentary process begins. There's text on the screen that explains what's going on, just like they didn't Get Back. I appreciate that it also calls out that a random deadline has been forced upon them to create tension and stakes, which feels very real, both for what's happening in the Mayhem's actual story and for what happened in Get Back when they were creating the Let It Be album. They have 8 days to film it. That's obviously a reference to 8 days a week. And we see a page of a calendar. This is also what they did in Get Back. You'd see a calendar and they would mark off day by day as they went through. And there's some really great jokes in this thing. On April 1st, it says, tell Lips he's adopted for April Fool's Day. the previous day to the day that we're on is just labeled yesterday.
Right before 420. April 20th, yesterday.
April 20th, I missed
and
that
you know,
one.
A lot of people complain, or some people are upset that you know Kermit didn't make an appearance on the show, but Kermit is on this calendar.
He's right there. And that, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is a sketch that Jim Henson drew himself, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
For That's amazing. Calendar. That I'm saying this now, and I'm saying it on a podcast, so maybe I'll actually do it. It is a tattoo I've considered getting, is that very specific Jim Henson Kermit with his hand up. Yep. There are it says April 29th is just mom's birthday. Mom, is that actually your mom's birthday?
It is my mom. I made the calendar, so yeah, this is
yeah. I just had to assume.
He wasn't sure whether to keep that on there though.
No, you know what it was? But there was also the first zoom in. This shot, the original VFX, zoomed in, but also sort of like favored it, if you will. Like the camera went right to that, and you just saw Jeff's mom's something, and it was a little too much. And I was like, can we redo that and just you get a hint of it, let people pause it and see whatever. But one of my greatest joys was when this did come out, my mom binged the show, you know, that morning. And I'm like, oh, did you see episode 6? I'm like, you should just check out that calendar. And she did, and she FaceTimed me in tears. She was so moved and so proud. And Jeffrey, I love it. And it was very, very sweet.
Oh, that's great. Really
nice.
That's the best kind of perk, right?
Yeah. It was very, to be able to do this.
Yeah. That's
my dad, he's like, what's for me in there? There's nothing. So
sorry, Dad.
Yeah.
You can come up with something. You'll think of something.
Totally.
Of something. Yeah.
Season 2 is all about your dad.
Yeah. Zoot.
Yeah.
Zoot is my
Zoot's
dad.
There.
Right. There's a music, there's like a little musical note thing at the bottom of the calendar as well.
Yep.
I don't read music, so I don't.
Neither do I. So I don't know if I got it right, but I did copy it from somewhere. And I think it's possibly a Rainbow Connection-esque part somewhere in there.
Okay.
But possibly not.
All right. Someone out there who knows more about music, let us know if that's accurate or what part of the song it is. Cause that's a nice little Easter egg. We get a shot of Janice turning an amp up to 11.5. That was seen in the trailer. Obviously a Spinal Tap reference. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that it doesn't just go to 11. It doesn't go to 12. It's just a smidge past 11.
Yes.
I'll tell you another interesting thing about this episode. We had a lot of, not trouble, but it was a lot of work to edit this episode. And what was very cool about it was a lot of these scenes were modular. And we can move things around. And one of the cool things that we shot were just all these little bits and pieces and whip pans. So we could give it that documentary feel, but also place them wherever we needed to, just to get to the next thing, whatever it was going to be. And again, we moved things around. We wound up color coding these scenes, writing them down. And just, you know, we have this scene, which is red here, and going to remove this one later. So that red carries over, but you could always cut to these really fun little B-roll things.
Yeah, and this sequence especially has like just a series of boom, 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 boom. You know, one of them is we see Floyd's Mr. Bassman sticker on his bass.
That was the other one that was when I watched it that weekend, get back, I was like, it's just right there.
Oh, it's so right good. There.
Because obviously Paul has a Bassman sticker. And then, yes, as Muppet fans would know, there's famously a Mr. Bassman.
Right, the Floyd song from the old days of the Muppet Show.
Bill, do you remember how many calls we were on where I was just like, don't forget, he needs the sticker.
No, I mean, I don't remember how many exactly, but I remember.
Yeah.
That we had to make sure it was there for yeah. sure. Yeah.
I'm so glad you did. Yeah. I saw it. I loved it. Moog is pouring a cup of tea for Zoot. And you had mentioned in a previous episode that the cups are the same ones used or seen in Get Back.
Bethany Barton.
So Bethany.
Took it upon herself.
Really?
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to make the cups the same.
it was just the greatest gift. Bill, you've mentioned it before, but it's just like when people saw how much we cared about this and all the details we wanted to put in, they just went with it, you know, and just absolutely, Bethany especially, just loves it and works her butt off to just put in all these details because she's a geek too, you know, she loves all this stuff. And I just remember the day she just came up to me so excited, you know, and just said, these are the mugs. These are the mugs. And I'm like, I didn't even know. I was like, yeah, fantastic.
We would have these meetings. We would go into their trailer.
Right.
And she had everything laid out.
Show and
donuts.
Tell.
And yeah, it was like, here's what do you think? And are these working? And just the research that she would do and just go take it upon herself to, you know, how do I elevate all of this, you know, in my own little way? And it does in such a big way, you know. So true. Great.
Zoot is brainstorming ideas of other people who can play him in the movie. In this moment, he suggests Elvis and is shocked to learn that Elvis is dead.
What? When? I love that. Just two words.
It's so good.
Yes.
And later on in the episode, same thing with James Brown, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
He's just completely out of the loop. This poor guy. Pick up a newspaper, Zoot. Dr. Teeth and Floyd are jamming together, and Penny is there, and she is knitting next to Dr. Teeth. Mm-hmm. And she says, you won't even know I'm here. And she starts clearing her throat, and she's making some awful noises. Leslie, you look like you're having a good time remembering this.
It was so fun. The other thing, like, you have to know I'm inside Penny, so I'm laughing in there because no one can see me. I feel like invincible in there. But the thing that makes me laugh, I was like, you know, like Bill is such an enabler. You know, I was making this one noise. Bill, you know, Kevin makes it when he scratches his throat.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's a weird noise. It's such a weird noise. And I did it because Kevin used to make these noises. It's really annoying. But what makes me laugh, because I just watched that scene, I played it back, I go, that one noise sounds like gas.
It's right at the end.
It doesn't sound like it's coming out of her mouth. And right
before the
scene changes itself.
Yeah.
It sounds like gas, and it just makes me laugh so hard. I'm so immature, but it just made me laugh.
But I just, and too, like from where my perspective with Teeth, he just loves her so much. Like
totally.
He, those sounds is, it's like, you know, it's I don't like, know. It's like bird calls to him, you know,
like listening to a pug snoring. It's like, isn't that cute? Listen to my pot-bellied pig.
Isn't she wonderful?
Yeah.
This is, I do want to praise you for this part of the relationship that they're in, Dr. Teeth and Penny, because I think a lesser show would have had them doing the Kermit Miss Piggy thing. One of them has a crush, the other one doesn't want it, going back and forth, whatever.
Oh no, they're hot for each other.
Yeah, like almost immediately. Like you're just like just a few episodes in, they're like, we're doing this.
Oh yeah.
And they're just in this relationship that's weird, but like oddly healthy. Mm. You know, like they're actually into a lot of the same things and they're very supportive of each other. Like I'm really into it. I ship them.
Oh yeah.
I just love it. It's you. I hate you.
I love it when she says that.
I hate you. But it was just like, oh my gosh, my pulse went up you know, like my hands was sweating. I can't believe I'm feeling this again. Yeah. But yeah, I just.
They were rekindled in a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty funny to me. But yeah, those noises were a pleasure to make.
I'm so glad.
And you can, I mean, and we've certainly had fun. You know, there's stuff that doesn't get used in the show, but we certainly had fun, you know, improvising while we were waiting to shoot and playing around. The what?
Internal. The different noise, love names.
Love names, yeah.
Like pet names for each other?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Any favorites that stick out to you?
Of course, I can't think of them now.
Well, you used the olive, right?
Yeah,
that we used.
My little olive. Yeah. I love the way she says olive.
Yeah, I think I had a, I think I had a mountain reference or something. You know, like my volcano of, you know, passion or something.
That's cute.
I remember at one point, I don't know if it was Dave or Zoot saying, "I can't stop looking at her." It was at the end of the scene. He goes, I can't stop looking at her.
Yeah.
The fine line.
A compliment or like a train wreck.
Why not both? In the next scene, Nora and Hannah are catching up in the makeup chair, and we get another Beatles reference as JJ runs by being chased by Animal, and he shouts, "Help, I need somebody." Which I also like, because he could have just said help. And it would have been another one of those, like, I don't know if you're paying attention, maybe you'd notice it was a Beatles reference, but yeah, you drove it home with I Need Somebody. Floyd and Dr. Teeth are still workshopping new songs. Floyd is humming out a song and he's replacing the word with like something, something, something. Is that another Beatles reference or is it just the word something?
Something was. Yeah, right. We had it at a few, but yes.
Why not?
No, it was. I mean, I definitely had written it in there at a different point, but this something, something, something suffices.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And it goes with that tune. Something, 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 something. Yeah.
Dr. Teeth is not listening because Penny has knitted him into a constricting turtleneck sweater that goes all the way up to his nose, which is a great visual. Just like his big floppy nose hanging out over this huge, potentially uncomfortable, probably very warm sweater.
Oh, he loved it.
He did seem to love it. Yeah.
It's beautifully crafted.
Everyone else was jealous.
Yep,
they were.
My favorite thing is that you're just jealous that I have a sweater that turtles my neck.
Turtles my neck.
It's just I love that such line. An amazing line.
Later, we see Dr. Teeth playing the keyboard, and Animal is like sitting in the background looking bored and kind of dozing off, which seemed like another Get Back reference.
Yeah, that's a ringer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teeth and Floyd are playing, and Penny decides she's going to join in, and she just starts singing.
Beautiful.
And it's like obviously a Yoko Ono thing. So tell me what was your like your cue, Leslie, for trying to recreate the sound? What was going through your mind?
Well, I watched the documentary, right? Like everybody did, and I said, "I'm like, do you want me to really sound like her?" Like. Do you want me to make that noise? I have that happen. And they're like, yeah, we want you to, because it's assaulting, you know, it's just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't even do it without the neighbors. Like,
dog.
Some sort of, someone's killing a yak in the apartment next door, you know, with a butter knife, you know? So again, it's just one of like, really? I'm inside Penny going like, I really get to make these noises, you know, just like I'm like, I guess I just felt so mischievous, but it was all so freeing as well. You have to imagine too, and I'm going to get a little female on you here, but this was during a time, you know, where we lost our rights. Roe versus Wade was overturned. Right. Mm. And so for me, Penny became even more important, I'm just going to say, because I was like, you want to talk about my body? I'm going to walk into this. You know, I was just like, so it was just very empowering to just unleash whatever, you know, like I said, unapologetically her expressing herself loudly with the permission of, you know, so it was just kind of like one of those things where, but yes, I did try to make those noises, and it was alarming, and I might have scared myself.
But I think this episode allowed her to become who she believes that she was when she knew the band. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd been living as now this owner of this record company, and she's supposed to be a certain person who's just not happy, you know, and now she's finding some joy and being playful. And so we start to see Penny in a more playful way, you know, gives her a place to go, which was nice. You know?
We also had a debate whether or not we could continue the screaming over the next scene. Penny, I believe, starts wailing, and then we go to a cutaway scene in the makeup room in the makeup chair. And we just tried to keep, I mean, because Leslie gave us, you know, minutes upon minutes of screaming, wailing, banshee crying.
One breath, I want you to know. Like the when we went to the looping scene, whatever, I'm like, I just kept going.
Yeah. And it peters out. But we're like, can we keep it? Can we keep it going through this whole dialogue? And it became just a little too much. So it goes, it peters out. It comes back in as we go back to the scene where she is just finishing, I believe, right?
Right.
Well, we look forward to Penny's solo album.
Yeah, totally.
Coming out any day now. Yeah. Nora asks Lips if he has any of the Beatles on speed dial. And he seems to respond in the affirmative. And it sounds like he's saying, "Love me do," as he's walking away.
It does sound like that.
I'm not saying he's saying "love me do."
Right.
But
check the subtitles. No, the closed captions probably tell us.
Yeah, right. He does that double thing, though. "No, no, me do."
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Could be anything. Moog is helping JJ. He doesn't know it at first, but he's helping JJ get in with Nora. The first thing he does is suggest getting bunnies for Animal to get on Animal's good side. And then soon after, once he realizes that JJ is using him, he tells him to ask the band how they got the name Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. Yeah. And this is great because, I mean, we've talked about this before, but early on in the season, the characters talk about how Dr. D's name's in the title, but he's not really the front man. It's a democracy for all intents and purposes. And it seems like Dr. T does not want to tell this story, but the rest of the band kind of jump in. Floyd explains that the band was originally called the Good Times, Happy Trails, Super Smiles Fun Band. But then they met Penny. And when Penny saw them for the first time, she felt a burning deep in her soul and scalp because her haircut caught on fire from the lasers of the laser show. Once the rubble cleared, she gave the band a record deal and a new name, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. And I love this, that she's like immediately tied into the band's history. Yeah. It's not just that she was present. Like, she actually did something that we saw throughout the Mayhem's history. We just didn't know it until now.
This was my audition. Which is such a great, the other thing, like the perfect character and then the perfect audition side, that you see that not only did she move out to California, you know, but there was a little more to the dialogue, right, Jeff? Because was like after an evening, you know, she had an evening. It's in reference to the evening she spent, you know, with this band and how electrifying it was. And then, but me as a Muppet nerd, when I read that line, like if someone told my fourth grade self that one day you're going to be a character that names the Electric Mayhem, that the band on your McDonald's glass, I was freaking out. I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this today. And and again, it was written, you know, because I was learning so many things with Penny as a new puppet. It was the first time I've ever had a two-camera shoot. So Bill was really helpful. You'd have to do a close-up and a wide shot. And, you know, when your brain is like, oh my gosh. And I had to get different glasses because my glasses weren't working in there. So I memorized everything, you know. I still had my papers in there, but I was so anxious about it. And that was, which helped in the wheelchair scene to be memorized, because I literally had no monitor because there was no room for it. But but it was such great storytelling, and it was such a vivid, it's so internal to who she is and what had happened. She's recalling it, you know, the greatest night of her life where she met the love of her life. So that was really, I really love that. So,
which is cool, because it does tie her, as you were saying, it ties her into their history, but it also sets, you know, that's what set up the story. You know, they signed a record contract with her those many years ago. There she was. She met, and now we're finding out when she met them, you know, and gave them the advance that they never recorded. You know, it all fits together. It's a just a cool way to tell the story, you know?
Absolutely.
I forgot there wasn't a monitor in your wheelchair.
Remember,
we tried.
Jane and I were trying to figure out how to get me small enough.
You right. know,
how to get me in there, because I had to ride and I had to like ball up and everything.
But I think we figured because she was so wrapped up, it.
Well, because like she couldn't see anyway.
Right. You wouldn't have an eye line anyway, really.
I go, yeah. Bill, I can't see anyway. And he goes, oh, well, then I guess you don't need a monitor. And I'm like, well, let's. So it was really a truth exercise. But that, again, is a Penny line. Again, thank you for this line that totally identifies who she is. What do you think? You know, I got here because I faked it till I make it. No, I got here. Brutal honesty. That's what you got to do. You got to be yourself, kid. That be who you are. Be your truth. And she's doing this really like beautiful line about be who you are. Yet she's just had plastic surgery.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That also tells us so much about who Penny is. Like, of course she wouldn't suggest lying about anything. She is so brutally honest to such a fault.
Yep, she doesn't. It's need that to
it's
lie.
It's refreshing.
Yeah,
but yeah, that tells you a lot about who she is.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, while the band is feuding, Animals bunnies are multiplying. There's a whole bunch of them now. Leslie, did you play any of these bunnies?
I did in the background. I think we all did background. Bill, did you end up using the looping thing that we did for the bunnies, or no? The sound.
Actually, we ended up doing some squeaks that I went and bought some toys at the pet store, and I did Foley squeaks at home, and then sent them in because they, I don't know, it was just the, I'm trying to remember, we did them with you,
these.
But they were like fart sounds and stuff, and we had less control.
Yeah.
And so, no, we actually just did, we ended up with more like squeaks and limited squeak bits and tried to time them, you know. Yeah. But yeah, no, the arm farts were fun to do.
That was just the weirdest looping session. But yeah, we all got to play. That was so fun. We all got to play background bunnies and stuff. So that was,
I think it was the pitch too. Like it was trying to get a little bit higher pitch and we couldn't kind of.
Yeah.
It was
Leslie is blowing into her forearm.
I have a gift.
Trying to make like a squeak noise.
Yeah, I have a gift. I at parties I can do celebrity farts. If you name a celebrity, I can impersonate them. On
Ernest Borgnine. Ernest Borgnine. Yeah.
That's
nailed it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a gift.
Really good.
It's like he's right here.
Really good.
And a curse.
Yeah.
So Floyd and Dr. Teeth are still feuding. This is where we get this great scene we referenced earlier, that Dr. Teeth suggests that Floyd is jealous that Penny made him a sweater that turtles his neck. And Floyd is jealous. Yeah, and he says, well, he'll ask if Penny can make him one. And Floyd says, it'll be very much appreciated. And they're shouting, thank you, you're welcome, very angrily at each other. It's such a kind fight. I appreciate that about the Mayhem.
That's the Mayhem.
Like, they love each other so much. Yep. Like even when they fight, they're pretty nice to each other.
Yeah, it's hard for them to be really mean. They know they're angry with each other, but it's not about the words. It's about how they feel, right. You know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Floyd says, just like the Dark Horse himself, George Harrison, he is going to take his leave and go home in polite protest, just like George did in Get Back. Yep. And another reference. Everyone should go watch Get Back if you haven't watched it yet. It's terrific. They make Muppet references through the whole thing. They're just referencing this episode.
It's a great point. Yeah. It goes both ways.
Lips shows up with Susanna Hoffs. Nora had asked for a beetle, not a bangle.
Mm.
Susanna says that Lips is the one who taught her to walk like an Egyptian. So this is a great little cameo. I mean, what a great you know, reference to 80s culture, but also, you know, giving us the joke of the Beatles Bengals thing. And, you know, someone who I love the greatest hits of the Bengals. I don't think I'd recognize Susanna Hoffs if I bumped into her on the street, but now I will, because you guys gave her this wonderful spotlight on the show.
Yeah.
She was
super sweet.
Super sweet off stage. Like, she was like working really hard. She was shy, you know?
Nervous.
So, like, yeah. Oh, are you gonna, I'll work your lines with it. You know, like, she was just, everybody was just so kind and giddy and like committed and heartfelt to be there. Like, they just put 100% in, and she was just.
Yeah. She had actually one of the, you know, it's entrances that people probably don't realize, but entrances for humans and puppets at the same time are very difficult, because you're doing half of a decking, right? Yeah, that goes under the door so that they can walk along there. So it's a little tricky, because, you know, they're trying to look straight ahead and not look down at their feet. So their safety net, I always say to them, is us, right? We're down here. So if you've, we've got, I know it's not the most reassuring thing, but if you come off of that, off of that decking, we're here. We're going to stop you, right?
Right. You're saying, so she had a narrow path.
Yeah. She had a very narrow path. She had basically, imagine yourself only allowed to walk through half of a doorway, but you can't look down, right?
Have you ever had a celebrity fall on you?
Yes.
Like that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Whose life did you save?
Fell on you?
Cindy Crawford almost fell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's too bad.
She was dancing with Bobo.
Yeah, well, it wasn't while we were dancing. It was while we were rehearsing. But yeah, she almost fell. But she landed on Bobo. And I just pushed back, you know. But yeah, it's, it happens.
I like your acting, just like so nonplussed by it. I just, that would be, start my obituary with that one.
She could have fallen all the way off.
Someone out there is bragging about how Cindy Crawford fell on them. And it's a less interesting story, because they didn't have
Bobo.
A giant bear puppet.
Yeah.
Right, Bobo. Yeah, Bobo's talking about it. The band decides to put their argument aside so they get back to the album. And they start playing a song. Dr. Teeth says he wrote it about Penny, but Floyd says he wrote it about Janice. Janice says she wrote it about herself. They're back to fighting. So Floyd says, well, he'll just write another song about his other true love, Soup. And here we get Soup to Dupe. Jeff, this is a wonderful song. I don't know why it's not on the album.
I know.
The song slaps.
I've said before, I feel like if I say it now third time, the Basement Tapes, if they just put out like just a mini release with all these little fun songlets, people would buy it. And I think, you know, it'd be.
Or
yeah,
it could be a Disney plush, right? It could be an item where it's like a can of soup. That has Floyd on it, whatever it is, and you squeeze it, and the sound chip is in there.
Yeah, you pull the string in the back, yeah. And then it sings the soup to doop. Yeah.
Some Ma's soup.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yep.
Right? It's a product.
Yeah, it's my kid's favorite thing in the show, too. It's her favorite song.
Of all the songs, it's the soup to doop song is the favorite? Yeah. Great.
It's an earworm.
But what I like here, and tell me if this is a Get Back reference or not, is that we're really seeing Floyd's entire creative process, like when we saw Paul McCartney write Get Back in real time in the documentary. Is that kind of what you were going for?
Yeah, I mean, there's different than that. You know, the something, 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 something. There were two directions we could have gone, and we discussed both of them. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bill. Mm. But one of them was that we would see them develop this song. And at the end, perform that song. So, right. You know, love's the only thing that matters. Love's the only thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think we just got swayed and so into the fact that they would perform a Beatles song on the roof, you know.
Yeah.
It almost betrays what should be the story thing. But yes, watching in that documentary is on the spot where all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, he just figured out, you know, Get Back. Like that you're watching a classic in real time being created. Something that we wanted to do, but then I think I just
I think we ended up with that Beatles song because it was again supposed to be a documentary about love,
exactly, right?
And that's what the intention was from the beginning, was this needs to be about love, and you know, and so you have the Nora and JJ stuff and all that, but mm-hmm. I think you're right, Jeff. Initially we thought that would be the song that they figure out.
Right.
Yeah.
So throughout the episode, we would chart that song being written.
Yeah.
But
right. Yeah.
It still works because, again, it's a Beatles song, you know?
Yeah.
You can't go wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Well, I don't know. I've heard some bad Beatles covers in my life, but you did not go.
We're going to pan up to the roof and they're playing Number 9.
Right.
You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say.
That's a good Beatles
so
song.
Catchy, though.
Yeah. I like that one.
Yeah.
Lips shows up with Paula Abdul. Nora asks for a Paul, not a Paula. And she's worked with the Muppets before. In fact, Bill and Leslie, you've both worked with Paula Abdul before on Muppets Tonight.
Yes. The Boss Men.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So sweet and kind. I painted shoes for her. My mom reminded me.
Oh, did you?
I didn't realize I did. I painted her some high heel sneakers that had clouds on them and stuff like that. But I want to paint her another pair because I'm up, gotten better. But she was so sweet. And she's such a, you know, dancers talk to everybody. You know what I mean? They're just awesome people. I mean,
I always find that talkers dance with everybody. That's the flip side of it. Sorry, interrupted.
I'll tell you my little quick story. So when I first started dating my wife, Christina, during Muppets Tonight. No, we didn't first start, but we've been together for a little bit.
You got married during Muppets Tonight.
I did. And we weren't married yet. But Paula wrote a little note to my mom.
Really?
Yeah. I think your son is very handsome and talented. Ooh. Something like that. Well,
the wedding's off.
And Christina was like, what the hell is that?
how did she write to your mom, Bill?
Because my mom was visiting or something. And she left a little note or something, gave me a note to get, like, I don't, it was like, Bill, tell your mom. Maybe it was more like that. I have to ask Christina. I don't know if she remembers either, but it was just something that, you know, it felt like it could have been a flirt thing, but it probably wasn't. It was just her being.
You got to find that note.
Yeah, I don't know if I still have it, but Christina was like, excuse me? Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And then, but then I got to know her actually over the years, like we actually ran into each other, all of us at like a lunch one time, and she's just so sweet. She's so cool. And when I saw her, we saw each other, and what did she say?
You had that note? She said, do you have that note I gave your mom?
Yeah, right.
No.
Can I have it back, please?
Here's a PS.
No, I oh darn. Now I can't. Oh, I blew it. I can't remember. We saw each other and it's been like 25 years or something, you know, and she looks amazing. Like she doesn't look any different. You know, I was like, you look exactly the same. And she was like, thank you. I was like, so you're not going to say the same thing for me, you know, but no, she's super sweet, super nice to come and
That's great.
She's awesome.
Did you reminisce at all about your Muppets Tonight days with her, like working with Muppets again, or?
Didn't get a chance to really, you know, we were just trying to shoot, you know, but no, I don't know if anybody else did.
I apologized for grabbing her boob as Robot Lincoln.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What a thing that you can say is that you grabbed Paula Abdul's boob as Robot Lincoln.
That is the most Mad Lib.
That's quite a sentence.
He leaned forward and there was a screw in the set that was going into my forehead. And I was like, and then he's like, I'm so sorry. She's like, oh. And Jerry goes, Robot Lincoln would have grabbed your boob.
Sounds like he forescored.
Oh.
More comedy, see?
Deported choice. No, I didn't apologize, but I should have.
Well, you know, no shade to Paula Abdul, but our next scene gives us maybe the greatest guest star on this entire series.
Jackson Beretta.
Okay, the second after Jackson Beretta is, you got Morgan Freeman to dress up as Zoot.
He wanted it so, he loved it.
How did that happen?
I didn't know it was him, Bill. I did not know it was him. He was
who? Morgan Freeman?
No, he was another people. I'm like, I just laughed. I'm like, wow, they really did a number on you. Not realizing I was talking to him. It was awkward.
Wow. Was he with all the other Zoots when you said that? Like, were you looking to see a Zoots?
They were waiting to be loaded up.
Right. Oh, right. So that makes sense. Because you wouldn't think, oh, of all these Zoots, one of them is an A-list celebrity.
The way my face looked was not, it was like, oh, you know, it wasn't like, oh, look what they did to you.
It's incredible.
No, but he was in the makeup trailer. And Jackson was getting his makeup done. He had the nose.
But
and...
first, tell us who Jackson Beretta is.
Oh, Jackson Beretta is my son.
You figure it out.
Your son, Jackson Beretta.
Yes. And Jackson plays the Zuplicate. Who has, I think, I mean, he got a great line, which is, you know, great. And, you know, lost another role to Freeman. but he's only in there because Adam insisted on it. It was really about Adam saying no, because Jackson, while we were in our writer's room, Jackson would come in, he'd do a bit every now and then, or he'd do something, you know, and Adam was like, you know, he should be, why isn't he doing, why isn't he acting? I said, well, he is, you know, he wants to be an actor. And he's like, we should have him in, we should get him in something. And Adam just insisted that Jackson play this character. I was like, I'm going to back out you. If you guys want him, that's great.
Every opportunity.
And so that's how he got in, and I think he did a great job. You know, he really did well. Yeah, but how
he nailed that line.
Yeah. How to play next to Morgan Freeman? You know,
right next to Morgan Freeman.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, Morgan Freeman came in. I was like, "Do you have any questions about the script?" Or he's like, "I just want to know if I could. My first line could be, sup, y'all. I'm Zoot."
Yeah,
I was like, "Yeah, no, yeah, you can say that."
But he was in the trailer, so Jackson was in there, and Jackson was getting the full Zoot, you know, and Morgan had a hat and the hair, and he was like, how come I don't have a nose? You know, he was like, he wanted more stuff, you know, which was great. He was into it. So he got a little more, he got glasses and a nose, you know.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I love that he was so game.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Game. I love hearing
totally,
that.
Totally. Turns out he was a huge Muppet fan, you know?
Yeah, so like he hasn't done much with the Muppets. I mean, his biggest connection really was he was when he was a member of the Electric Company.
I was going to say the Electric Company.
No. He was in the Electric Company, and they did a special called "Out to Lunch" with the Electric Company and the Sesame Street Gang. But no one who was working on Muppets Mayhem would have been part of the Sesame crew in those days.
Yeah.
So you know, there wasn't anyone who could be like, "Oh, Morgan's back. Hello, good to see you again." But yeah, I mean, just. Especially with A-list celebrities, you'd never know if they would be game to like play, to have fun with characters like the Muppets. I'm sure you've worked with big celebrities who maybe feel like they're a little above it. So nice to hear about Morgan Freeman.
Honestly, I can't think of many that have been
that
have felt above it. Honestly, I mean, usually it's people that aren't up in that status that feel maybe a little more insecure about it and feel they need to be justified or something. But usually the top A-list people are all in. They just love to be made fun of, you know, however you can have the Muppets tease them, tear them down. Generally across the board, they tend to love it, you know. And actually you brought up Electric Company. That's the thing that I actually was talking to him about when I had a chance just to greet him and see him, you know, hang in the trailer for a minute. Just telling him how much as a kid, I just remember him and Rita Moreno, you know, really stood out for me watching the Electric Company and just loved it. You know, it was like a big thing to me when I was a kid. He was like, oh, that's great. Oh, cool. You know, like, all right, well, I'll see you in there. Okay.
I had him sign my penguin.
Oh, you did?
Oh, cute.
No, I didn't. I already made that weird face.
I had him sign a postcard, a replica postcard of the thing he sends Andy Dufresne in at the end of Shawshank, Zawatneo.
Really?
Yeah, so he signed that. I'm like, oh, do you recognize this?
You got some autographs on this show.
Jeff was, he was all about getting, he, Jeff
you know,
was good about it. He
it
got
was Adam there. Who's just encouraging. Adam made an entire show so he could just have his stuff signed.
Right, he would
be the first one to be like, absolutely, go and ask. Bill was like, don't.
I was like,
don't. What did you get signed? What?
Tons of stuff.
I know.
Name a guest star.
I'll tell you.
Right. That's so fun, though.
I have a pumpkin signed by Billy Corgan. I have Cheech and Chong album signed by Cheech and Chong. I have.
What did you have Jackson Beretta sign?
That's the one I said yesterday because I tweeted
the script.
Right. So for this episode, you know, it's my sole writing credit, and I had the cover page signed by everyone who was on it. And the one person I couldn't get was Jackson Beretta.
He's tough to get, man. He's tough to get.
Elusive.
He's tough to get. But yeah. No, just for everyone, I tried to get something, you know.
He was the one celebrity that was kind of above the Muppets.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was, he had a little.
But ask him about his career and his acting chops, and he'd get blue in the face.
You know, all right. Maybe I can work it out. We'll see if we can work out getting that signature.
Please.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just a blast just taking pictures and just, I mean, it was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll get to another one in a little bit who's just insane, you know?
No, I'm excited to talk about that. But first, just to wrap up the Morgan Freeman stuff, he tells Zoot he just wants to know what it feels like to walk in his shoes. And so Zoot takes off his shoe and says, let's ask Jimmy. And Jimmy Shoe, the shoe, says, that's not so bad. And Morgan Freeman has like a beat and says, this very well may be the role of a lifetime. And he says it with such gravitas about a talking shoe. My God, what a get Morgan Freeman was.
Well, and about Zoot, right? It's about that's the role he's going to play. The guy that can talk to his shoe.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll talk more about Jimmy Shoe later on, like what a great moment in television history. So in the studio, it's pure chaos. The Zoots are all playing their saxophones. The bunnies have completely taken over the studio. Paula Abdul is choreographing Floyd's soup dance. So Nora kicks everybody out, and JJ admits that he did all this, buying the record label, giving Animal the bunnies, lasering off all of his body hair, taking hand gesture lessons.
That's an Andres improv.
Yeah,
that's good. I'm also saying this, or realize gesturing wildly with my own hands unintentionally. Yes. Because he's got a thing for Nora. He still has holds a candle for her. And Kevin Smith says that JJ is Nora's Amy, the one who got away, referencing his classic movie Chasing Amy.
It's a good thing we got Kevin Smith, by the way.
Right?
Yeah. Whew. Imagine if someone else was saying, she's your Amy. Well, it would mean nothing.
Yeah.
Nora admits that love is hard for her, as it is for most people, but the band is not most people. The band is all about love, and they make up. And that's what Kevin Smith needed for his documentary. Dr. Teeth also declares... the band name thing, Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, it's obviously driving a stake through the band. So he says, we am, is, are, and be, they whom are known as just the Electric Mayhem. Of course, quoting his line from the Muppet movie, but omitting his own name from the band. And that's it. You've created a new history for the band. And it makes so much sense.
In the future.
Yeah. Because we don't need it. We don't need Dr. Teeth's name in the band. We just need to know that they're the Electric Mayhem, and it feels like the hard thing to do as writers, I'm sure, which is to show growth but also get back to a status quo. Right.
What it does do though is it does create marketplace confusion.
Does it?
I think so. We still have the Electric Mayhem, and there's also Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, but it's all good. T-shirts,
as if they're two different bands.
I do love the line. There's that little exchange earlier when Dr. Teeth says, we're all the front man, and then Floyd says, that's because you're always in the front, man.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great
great. And he's not wrong.
Yeah, it's a great line.
It's like that weird thing too, where like bands complain about or keyboardists complain in bands because they used to be always in the back. And so that's why the keytar was invented, so they could actually get up front. But Dr. Teeth really is always up front when the Electric Mayhem's on stage.
Yeah, he's kind of
staging
on
his part.
Yeah, kind of. Floyd Floyd and Janis are more up front, but he's
that's true.
They're wings. He's a wing, and Zoot and Lips tend to be wings now. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, but not like driven into the back like some bands might do with their keyboardists.
Yeah.
Nora still kind of regrets not getting a Beatle for the documentary, but they still succeeded in telling a story about love. They don't need Paul McCartney. And in that moment, Lips gets a call on his phone from Paul McCartney and declines it. Now, I got to know, Did you actually try to get Paul or Ringo to appear in this episode?
Absolutely.
Yes. I sent a video of Dr. Teeth asking Ringo to be in the video, in the show.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it's just he was on tour.
Yeah. It just, again, all these musicians were on tour. It, like, we had a very, very tight schedule. And, you know, there's not much adjusting. Like, you know, Paul McCartney, he's in town in 3 weeks. But we're not.
Right. Yeah.
We have our director here now. We have, you know, our cast, all these people. This was also a scene that had a lot of people, you know. So it was a tough one. We had to, you know, work around.
Absolutely.
Abby got kissed by Paul McCartney. I'm just going to say it.
Oh,
when?
So Actors Equity Fights AIDS, they had a benefit and they were doing the music of Frank Lesser. Paul McCartney owns all the Frank Lesser music. So he was with Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. They'd asked if we could do Inchworm or something. So it was Grover, Abby, and Cookie Monster. And we were, you know, like Cookie's eating all the cookies from Paul McCartney's dressing room. We were just ad-libbing, you know, and we walk backstage. Paul McCartney runs after us like, Cookie Monster, you're eating all my cookies. I was just like, we all were just kind of like shaking because we didn't know what to say. And we're like, I need to put my puppet on my hand. So we interacted with them. And then we were backstage and Paul McCartney sang one of my favorite Frank Lesser songs. It's called Slow Boat to China. I wanna get ya. It's just gorgeous. And he's singing it on stage and I'm totally swooning. And we're backstage with our Muppets. And I'm like, technically I'm on stage with Paul McCartney because the stage goes all the way back to the wings. And he comes off stage and I'm standing there and I have Abby and like, I'm like, you're so magical. He goes, you're the one with the magic. He goes to kiss her, but I'm gasping and my natural reaction is to open the mouth of my thing. And I go, huh? Eric's wife, Mary, snaps a picture and it looks like Paul McCartney is open mouth kissing Abby. It's the angle. I can find it and send it to you.
Would love to see that, even though I'm sure the people at Sesame do not want anyone else to see it.
We weren't allowed to tell anybody because normally Sesame Street's not allowed to do other nonprofits, but we were under the radar and we were begging to do that. So that's my little thing. I was like, well,
amazing. I love that.
We should probably mention that even though Ringo couldn't make it into the episode, that he does play on one of our songs.
Yeah.
We Are One in another episode.
Wait, he does?
Yeah.
Yeah. Linda Perry got Ringo to play the drums on We Are One.
You know the Minecraft song?
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's playing on that, which is
amazing. It's baffling that this wasn't promoted more, that Ringo is on a Muppet album.
Yeah.
But here we are talking about it on a podcast. That's what here we're doing. Are. Yeah.
Wow, I'm going to go look at our album.
You should listen to it. I mean, it's very, very cool. You can hear. You're like, yeah, that's Ringo, you know, playing with Animal.
It's cool. It's very cool. We'll talk about that in the next episode for sure.
Right.
So, so we need a big ending to this documentary. So the band goes to the roof, just like the Beatles did at the roof of Abbey Road. They sing All You Need Is Love. As the band is singing, Penny starts to sing along in her Yoko Ono voice. And JJ immediately and very wisely unplugs her mic. And I feel like this is a true story. You're nodding, Jeff. Remind me what this is from.
It's John Lennon performing with Chuck Berry on what show was it? Not variety show, but some, you know, television show. And she joins in. Like, they are jamming. It's awesome. It's magic, right? And then she grabs a mic and starts banshee screaming and someone has to just turn off the mic, you know, and like John I think does his best to sort of not acknowledge it, but it is cringy.
I've seen this on YouTube and you could see there's a look on Chuck Berry's face like, what just happened?
Yeah, who is this? Oh. What is this? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a nod too. But also gives great closure to that, you know, to Penny on that episode.
Fun. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Nora and JJ seem to be getting closer and Moog asks Hannah what his next move should be. And she says the only next move, just let it be.
That's it.
That actually is not a Beatles reference. That just
no, it's not.
That worked out. That was just
improvised.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, amazing. Wow.
So what's interesting about this next moment, you know, I think you can notice that we graded the episode to make it look like it's film. Make it look like it's old film. And so we have the film run off here after this last roof shot, and then it goes back to our regular show. We just wanted to be clear that that had ended.
Absolutely. And it's also interesting because this is, correct me if I'm wrong, the only episode that kind of has what acts as a tag at the end of the episode in that way. But it's also the only episode that doesn't have a cold open with the gang in the van.
The van, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we've kind of removed something from the top and we slap something on the bottom.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is such a great scene. I love this. Before we even talk about it, I was told when we got the press release that had the full list of all the celebrity cameos, we were told, I think by you, Jeff, or Adam over social media, this is not everyone. There are names that were left off this list. And so we were like, okay, anyone could show up. That was really exciting for us. As far as I know, this is the only celebrity that was not on that list, if I'm remembering correctly.
Ringo Starr on drums on We Are One.
Ringo Starr on drums, right. But this one, for people we see on screen.
Yes.
And it was such a great surprise. I think if we had known Peter Jackson was going to be somewhere in the season, we'd have been like, well, he's going to be in the Get Back episode. Easy.
Yeah. Can I give the quick story for this?
I would love it if you did.
So when, Adam pitched it, you know, this was the idea. Peter Jackson, oh my God, Peter Jackson's possibly interested. Fantastic. We wrote the entire script with Peter Jackson. As the director. It's all Peter Jackson references. Right. It's terrific.
Great.
And then it's like, what are the logistics here of getting Peter Jackson to do this? Does he fall within our time frame? Is he available? All this stuff. And it was looking less and less likely that he would be able to do it within our time frame. And we can't, again, like just bend it around production for this possibility. But it truly was a saga. And so at a certain point, we knew that we could get Kevin Smith.
But we don't forget, we were like trying to, we reached out to whoever we could, like the head of the film, our friend who used to be at Henson, who became an ambassador. And that was, you know, like whoever could reach out
and help us.
Yeah, with Charlie getting like customs things.
I think there were like legal faster, things that had to be.
All kinds of things that had to be,
And so we did. We rewrote it and we made it Kevin Smith. That's why there's all these Kevin Smith references. And it works. It works great. You know, that's a thing. When you get lemons, we wrote Lemonade, right? So it just, how could it be anyone but Kevin Smith at this point? And we shot it and it's great. And it's even better than we imagined. And this worked out great. We're so proud of ourselves. We did this. I think 3 days after that, our producer, Michael Bostic, walked into the writer's room, like, ashen-faced. I'm like, what's up? And he's like, so just heard from Peter Jackson's people. Peter Jackson's very excited to shoot his part in a week from now.
He can be here.
Yeah, and we're like, what? We can't. We shot it. We can't do that. That's not even an option. But is he willing to do a single scene? And we talked about these people being fans. Yes, he only wants to do something the Muppets. He's a huge Muppet fan. Meet the Feebles. It's his tribute to the Muppets. It's a very weird tribute to the Muppets, but it's his tribute to the Muppets. He loves the Muppets, and he's totally down to do a single scene. Great. But it continued that way where it was like, ooh, yeah, you know what? He hurt his back.
Yeah, he has to go to the hospital. There's yeah,
death in the family or whatever. It was. Yeah. It was a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And we just like, it's gravy. It's icing on the cake if we're able to get him. But obviously, we shot it already. We don't need it. If it can happen, fantastic. Our last day of shooting, or the day before, we find out he will be here tomorrow to shoot this scene. And yeah, I mean, it's the last day of school, essentially. Everyone's excited. We're done, but we have a very full day. And then all of a sudden, this black SUV pulls up and Peter Jackson comes out.
And our director got COVID. So I ended up directing that scene.
So Bill Doyle.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I ended up.
And hilariously, so we go into Peter Jackson's trailer. Bill introduces himself and he's just like, yeah, I just want to talk to you about the scene. Peter Jackson says, you know, my big fear, and I'm not even going to try to do the Peter Jackson accent, but he's like, my big fear is that I show up on a set and my actors have ideas of how they want to do the scene differently. And Bill's like, yeah, right. And he's like, that's what I'm going to do to you today. Bill, very cool. Great. Like, oh yeah. Let's do it. So Peter Jackson then runs through his concept of how he wants to do this scene, which is a new scene, two scenes he wants to do. And Bill is just sitting there nodding, encouraging. That's great. It's terrific. He's like, I want to do it like it's a DVD signing or whatever it was.
Well, the big thing he wanted, he wanted to come off as a pompous ass.
Right.
He wanted to do what Gervais does with his shows when he has his guests where they're always like above it.
Like on extras.
Right, on extras. So he wanted to do that. So he had some ideas on his way in of how he could do that. And so I was just letting him unload, you know.
Totally.
Let's see where we go. Who knows, right? What could happen? Who knows?
Totally encouraging. He's like, I want to do a DVD signing. My wife and my daughter, who are on their way, Fran Walsh
is the
writer of all these scripts. They're stopping to get a bunch of DVDs so I could do this signing thing. And I'm all for it because I'm like, someone say signing? we go over to the set. We're going to do just a read-through, just a quick read-through of the scene, just so everyone's comfortable. And again, open to ideas. And I think it was sort of then that he was just like wrapping his head around.
I felt like because he had all these ideas and they're really fun, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of fun stuff. And I thought maybe there's a way we can put some of the stuff that he's talking in. Let's see what happens. But I said, why don't we just, before we make any decisions or change things, why don't we just read it with everybody so you can feel what it's like and we're in the room. And so we went, and when we did that, I think he realized it was probably funnier and more on point than maybe he originally thought. But he did it. It was with that adjustment of him being above, you know, being that pompous guy. And so we started to come up, Jeff was there, and we started to come up with lines for him, you know, to help add that to the existing scene. So really the adjustment became his attitude, you know, towards the who he was and how he felt with the Muppets, you know, which
these
was fun.
His ideas. I'm holding up script pages right now. This is
all right.
Sides for the day and just all his rambling notes. At the end of the day, I was like, can I have those? And got them and signed them.
But it turned out great because he really did play it as this guy who, you know, I don't do, what's the line?
So we wrote this scene and it was like 7 pages long because we get to write now for Peter Jackson. It's fantastic. Right. And then we had to cut it down. I'm like, please just save these two things. It's the Meet the Feebles reference. And I don't make sequels. I make trilogies. That's all I care about.
Both and, great moments,
We got them, and he loved it. I mean, the Meet the Feebles thing, he was like pinching himself. He's like, I can't believe, you know, that I get to mention the Feebles in this. And then that's his improv, you know, about two of them are in witness protection program. And
one's in jail, yeah.
And we still kept the structure of them at the table. And, totally. You know, oh, look who's here. And, you know, how's it going, PJ? And all that stuff.
Was there any pushback from anyone on the Disney side about the Feebles reference?
I don't think they knew. I don't think.
We didn't hear anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Nothing bad, you know?
Yeah, of course. And then when he says the I don't make movies, I make trilogies line, it sounds like to me in the background, there's like a Hobbit-esque musical cue. Is that, did I hear correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Mayhem theme. Working with Mick, I'm like, please, for this moment, can we just have something that's reminiscent of Lord of the Rings with like a little sort of flute kind of thing and just Mayhem themes. Great.
That's so good. Yeah.
Good little touch.
What a good sport.
I'll tell you, you want to talk here about good sport afterwards. He was done shooting, he took pictures. He wanted pictures with the Muppets and everything and everyone took pictures. And then he went off and Adam and I just followed him to his trailer where we just geeked out for the next hour. There was no more writing left to do. So we just talked with him and he showed us clips on his iPad, just stuff from first of all, we're the only two geeks in the world who are not huge Lord of the Rings fans. So like, I'm sure he was relieved to not be talking. I'm like, please tell me about Heavenly Creatures. Let's talk about Dead Alive.
Did you ask him about the Frighteners? I love the Frighteners.
Totally.
One of my favorites.
And he was showing us like, he's like, whatever, he on his iPad, he was showing us stuff and signing stuff for us. I mean, you want to talk about signing. He had a Comic-Con signing for me and Adam.
Wow. Oh, so good.
Couldn't have been nicer. They wound up sending me a Heavenly Creatures poster that they both signed, which is pretty
cool. That's cool.
Yeah, we were just shooting. We were just
you guys were still making the show.
Thanks for having your personal Comic-Con.
That was it.
It was love it. So the episode ends with him telling the band once again, act natural, don't look at the camera, and they look directly at the camera, and that's where the episode comes to a close.
Yeah.
So Leslie, now that we've wrapped this episode up, do you have any other fond memories of performing Penny or anything else you've done on the show that you'd like to share that maybe wasn't from the 8 days a week episode?
Yeah, this whole experience was just, I don't know, like Brigadoon for me, you know, like I couldn't, it opened up.
Can I be Gene Kelly? Like,
yes, definitely.
Okay. All right.
I definitely felt like everything that happened, the world opened up for me at just the right time. And so I was just floating every single time. Like I was super excited, like, oh, I'm the one small enough to fit underneath the hood of the bus to help Animal rip the steering wheel off, you know? Like I had just as much fun doing the puppetry that we got to do. Like one of my favorite scenes was like, I think it was, Floyd was lifting up his bass case or something. He was looking at a picture of Animal. And what I like is that it was all in camera puppetry. You know what I mean? Some stuff, you know, obviously were green screen when we were doing, you know, we're in the suits and everything like that. But the moments that we work together as a team, or you're tossing floss and there's somebody underneath there. So I'm like, those kind of moments, that teamwork and that where you're all like breathing together with the character to make it happen, you know, that to me is like so magical. And the artistry was so incredible. I really bonded with, like, I felt like the females on the set were super like supportive of, you know, I just fell in love with everybody on our cast and crew. You know, we'd be underneath the set. Jerry and I would be singing Little Mermaid, part of that world. Jerry's one of the grips. And Jerry's, it's just
Spider-Man.
Like, yeah. And towards the end, like one of the guys that I thought was kind of low key started wearing wigs for no reason. He just started wearing a different wig every day. For me, the whole thing is that little by little, like people were so joyful and playful. And so those little moments, I will say, Bill, you weren't here for this. The scene where Penny is on the.
I love it. I know. I missed that. We were shooting on the other stage.
The funny thing about that is that belt, the exercise belt, I lost 4 pounds. Penny, not least. But it was so hot. It was so funny because in order, the belt was so loud. I was sitting on a box and Penny's, her lovely schmata from Chico's, which is, I'm pretty sure where I had one outfit that I loved that it had palm trees on it. And I'm like, who wants in and out? You know, like I loved it. And also Bill came up, he goes, I'm sorry, but she already wore that. Doesn't she have something else to wear? Like Bill was so concerned, like she wouldn't wear that again. You know, she wouldn't do that. So I loved it. Like one time, one of my favorite moments was like, I was standing in the boots and I can't remember who was, one of the grips was trying to move. I can't remember his name. He was so sweet. He was moving the monitor and I was like, I could see his underwear brand. I'm like, oh, let's do Secret Santa. I know what you want. Whoever gets him has to buy Calvin Klein, you know? So I think Bill will attest the favorite parts of the in-between scenes. Whenever Penny and Bill were together, I laughed so hard. The chip scene was ridiculous. I was moving my legs. I was moving everything.
You made it look so good.
And you made it really look. It was so ridiculous that, and we were laughing so hard, but it was so hot. And I got out from under there. And I don't know if you guys watched the Flintstones, but there was a scene where Fred and Barney went into a sauna and they came out this big.
Oh yeah.
I felt like when I was in Penny, I came out and I was 4 pounds lighter. Like, I don't know what happened in there.
Puppetry is hard work.
That looks so good when she's on that machine. You made it look just, I mean, you really believe it. Christine was like, is she standing in there? How is that? She really believed that.
It's like,
really good. Yeah, it's really great.
It was silly. So, yeah, all of it.
We were so lucky to have you. Thank you. You're so good.
Thanks, Jeff. You guys wrote a really great, strong character that was effortless to play. And even though she was big, she was the workshop worked so hard. You know, I mean, it was just worth it. There was nothing really hard about it except for having to not do it anymore.
Mm. Well, hopefully we'll get more.
The workshop really did rise to the occasion to get these new characters out. And I mean, people have no idea what they go through every day to make sure these characters are ready and they're in the right clothes, because we're shooting three different episodes. And do we have the right props? And are they holding them? Are they attached? Are they, you know, they're the first ones there and the last ones to leave. It's crazy, crazy, amazing.
Russ from the Muppet Workshop, I have to give him a shout out. So we call Minpin, the Minpin. So when Penny was off of me, I had this metal stick, you know, this metal pole at my back, and people are above us, right? And I'm in the pit. And I was like, what if somebody's nostril gets hooked on the man? I fling them off and there's blood. Yeah. What if they fall and they get impaled on my?
Oh, no. Mm. Yeah, no, we don't want that.
If I had a tennis ball, I go, gotta put a tennis ball on there. I'm really worried that someone's gonna stab themselves. Well, Russ came home and he made this miniature.
Yeah, can you explain what we're looking at right now?
Okay, so it's a miniature Penny head, but it's made like out of fleece. It's not felted for people that are crafters. It looks just like Penny. It's fitting on my pinky. And so in between scenes, we used to have our hands up for eyeline for the fleshies, for the actors. They would just stick Penny. So I just stand in the scene and they talk to this little shrunken Penny head.
Just adorable. Looks like she's far away.
Yeah. It's like a shrunken voodoo head.
Yeah. Kind of creepy, but I love it. What a great souvenir too.
He surprised me with that. He just did it just for the heck of it. So that's how committed the crew and everybody works so hard for this show. You did a great show. Thank you, Jeff and Bill.
Thank you.
Well, and Leslie, thank you. Thank you for being here on this podcast. Thank you for bringing Penny to life. You brought gave us such a great original female Muppet character. And every word in that sentence is something to be celebrated. So thank you for doing everything that you've done for the show and for Penny.
Thank you. I love it so much. I love it like hot sauce poured into compression socks and filled in a bathtub with my little green olive.
That's my girl. Yeah.
And Jeff and Bill, thank you again for being here. We hope to see you again next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, we'll see. Everyone, tune in. You'll see if Bill and Jeff have made it back. Yeah.
You'll hear.
So you'll hear. And everyone who's listening, thank you for being here for another episode of the Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass. We'll see y'all next week.
The Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Produced, written, and hosted by Joe Hennis. Logo art by Dave Haltine Jr. The Muppets Mayhem mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Muppets Studio. All rights reserved. Transcriptions provided by Katie Lynn Miller. The Muppets Mayhem end credits written by Mick Giacchino is used with permission. Special thanks to the Muppets Studio, Disney Plus, and the entire Muppets Mayhem family. For more from ToughPigs, find us at ToughPigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon. Thanks for listening, and until next time, rock on!